Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arse Blog Arsecast, right here on arseblog.com in what has been a fairly momentous week for Arsenal Football Club, and not much of that has got to do with what happened on the pitch. Now, I know there are those of you out there who will say, I just can't believe he's downplaying a 3-1 away win against the mighty Blackpool. And maybe you have a point, but as awesome and wonderful as that was, there are other things that happened this week that will shape the future of the club for years and years to come. And obviously, we'll be covering those between now and the end of the show. Joining me in a few moments' time will be Amy Lawrence from The Observer. A small announcement, no Internet Joe this week. Apparently, someone banjaxed his router and he is epileptic with rage. So we can only hope that he gets things sorted between now and the next show. Let's start with football, because that's altogether more simple than everything else that went on. And, we won, and that's good. It had been some time since our last 3 points, and we looked good, really good at times, and bad, really scarily, quite scarily, not bad, but just shaky and all over the place at others. The start of the game, not so good. Until halftime, really very good indeed. We opened up Blackpool at will, beat the offside trap. Had Robin van Persie not been made out of hard concrete or something, the way the ball was bouncing off him, we might have been 3 or 4 or 5 nil up at halftime. As it was, we do what Arsenal did and let in a goal and then went, ah! And panicked. And Blackpool really gave everything in that time. And the one thing I would say is that after everything that's happened to us in the last few months, we actually got a little bit of luck. Because there could easily have been a penalty to Blackpool. Jens Lehmann, a ref, with a quicker whistle, could easily have blown and sent Jens Lehmann off. And given what happened with Manuel Almunia, we had no reserve keeper on the bench, and that would have meant Robin van Persie going in goal. And as much as we like to castigate referees for being wankers, which many of them are, let's face it, you have to give credit to Lee Mason for what happened for the Blackpool goal. Firstly, he played an advantage after a Wilshire foul, and then he played advantage when Lehmann took down the man. And had he not done that, it could have been much, much worse. So well done, Lee Mason. Until the next time you do something that makes us all think you're a wanker. And we were rattling, but we got a little bit of luck. And you have to say that it's a little bit overdue, that we haven't had any luck, only bad luck in recent times, and if he missed a penalty decision, well then, fine. I'm quite happy with that, because we've had all the bits and pieces that have gone against us, and, you know, we've stoically accepted that, without complaint, without bitching, without going mental, without shrieking our nuts off on Twitter or anything like that. We've just accepted it and moved on, and that's what Blackpool should do. Accept it and move on. And then we got the third goal, and it really was a very, very good goal indeed. Because when the ball, after the Schillaci tackle, was down in that corner and Diaby was Diabying with it, I was going, no, don't do that, don't, just kick it up, no, you'll get caught, you'll be clichéd. But he wriggled away from his marker, and the football that followed really was fantastic. The ball from Cesc to Theo to Robin, who even he couldn't miss then. And 3-1, and that was about that. And 3 points that were very, very badly needed, given everything that had come in the last few weeks. Not exactly the kind of performance that will build confidence straight away, but taking 3 points is certainly welcome and will help as we go into these final games of the season. So, then, on Monday, well, maybe that evening after the Blackpool game, there were reports that Stan Kroenke was about to take over the club, and there was a bit of bewilderment about why it was all happening, and that became clear obviously later in the week. And now we are 62.83 something percent owned by Stan Kroenke. And I think it's inevitable. I think it's sad in a way. And I know a lot of people feel like they've lost a bit of a connection with the club. And there's an air of inevitability about a takeover. The smaller shareholders are boosted by the fact that Ali Shahrusmanov is refusing to sell his stake in the club. And that means that those fans who hold shares in the club can maintain them. I'm not quite sure where the perception of Kroenke, had he got 90%, was immediately going to buy them all up. That's a worry and a threat, regardless of whether it was Kroenke or anybody else, that they could take full control, 100% control of the club. I don't think anybody wants to see that. The painting of Usmanov as a white knight of some kind didn't really sit right with me at all. Regular readers and listeners will know that when Mr. Usmanov first came to the club, there was some rather heavy-handed lawyering done on his part towards Arsblog, and all I did was link to some material that's freely available on Google. Now, the concerns that I had then are not at all eased. I still have grave concerns about the character of that guy and what he's done and how he's done it. And for me, if we're in a position where it has to be one or the other, and I think it was getting to the point where it did have to be one or the other, Kroenke is by far the best option. He's worked with the board, and I think we know from everything that's happened in the last week that Danny Fisman was a man who loved Arsenal Football Club a great deal and who worked so hard to get us to the new stadium. I don't think you could ever, and I've never heard anyone question his integrity, never question that anything he did wasn't for the benefit of Arsenal Football Club. And I think that if he has decided, and I think it's fairly obvious that he did, that Stan Kroenke was the best man to maintain Arsenal Football Club in the years ahead, then we kind of have to trust that. I think it would have been very different for me and for many fans if Ali Shahrusmanov had taken over, regardless of who he had on board, who might be held in reasonable regard by Arsenal fans, some Arsenal fans. It's been a week in which everybody said the right things, from the manager to Stan Kroenke to Peter Hillwood to everybody associated with the club and the deal said the right things. So we have Stan Kroenke's assurance that the debt won't be put on the club, and we know from discussions that the AST have had that this is not going to be the case, and smaller shareholders can take and maintain their shares in the club for sentimental reasons and not financial ones, and that's a good thing. But when it comes right down to it, for me, there was a straight choice between Kroenke and Usmanov. It had to be Kroenke. Usmanov would have changed too much about the club for me. And I know that people are a little bit disconnected from the Arsenal that they grew up with and everything else. And change is always weird and scary in every walk of life. But I think the best chance we have of maintaining the traditions, the Arsenal way of doing things, is with Stan Kroenke rather than Ali Shahrusmanov. And the other big event this week, of course, was the passing of Danny Fisman, director at the club, a huge Arsenal fan. And I think it shows the measure of regard in which he was held and the sort of class that Arsenal Football Club have. The ceremony yesterday, which named the bridge after Danny Fisman, and also Ken Fryer, a man who has worked with Danny Fisman, worked at the club since 1950. I think it's a reward for the hard work they put in and a way of ensuring that, regardless of the fact we'll look at the stadium and remember Danny Fisman, that bridge will bear his name in decades and decades to come. So there you go. Anyway, as I said, no internet show this week, but with me to discuss all the various bits and pieces is Amy Lawrence from The Observer. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you doing?
Can we start with Danny Fisman, who passed away this week? A hugely respected member of the Arsenal board and a man who has left behind in more ways than one a really great legacy.
Well, that's absolutely right on two counts. One, he was a really top man, and anybody who was lucky enough to bump into him around the scene, he was always a gentleman. He wasn't someone who courted publicity, so unlike some directors at certain clubs, you wouldn't see him too often voicing off about this or that, but he really had his heart in the right place and was a good guy. And I think going around over the best part of 20 years as a figure in football circles, he would have been someone that projected a nice image of Arsenal. But equally importantly to that, certainly as far as fans are concerned, there's no way that Arsenal would be where they are today without him, quite literally. There was a massive dilemma, if you like, when the club took the unanimous view to move from Highbury in search of a bigger operation. And the dilemma was to basically boil down to go to somewhere like Wembley and be a tenant, look at further afield, perhaps out and towards the M25. That was an idea that was mooted at certain stages, or the desire to stay in the roots of the club in M5. And Danny was instrumental in the fact that, you know, the new stadium is spitting distance from Highbury, is still in, you know, everybody still has their same routines. And because he wasn't a big figure, like I said, who talked a lot and who appeared a lot publicly, people don't realise that he basically gave 6 years of his life to the project. Him and Ken Fryer worked every day and every night on, if you can imagine what it takes to move house and buy and sell a property and multiply that by about 1,000, that's probably the kind of work that was involved for them. They had to liaise with everybody and organisations, not just architects and estate agents and the financial, you know, side of things, but with transport for London, with police, with, you know, you name it, they were involved in making this thing happen. And it was an enormous project to which he really dedicated quite a large chunk of his life, with no financial payment at the time, because directors at Arsenal have not been taking money for what they do, mainly over the last, you know, few years. So it was a labour of love for him, and I think everybody associated with Arsenal has to be grateful for that.
I think he's definitely got to be a man who'll be remembered long into the history of this football club. Obviously, it went a long way to explain some of the events earlier in the week. His share sale, the share sale of Lady Nina to Stan Kroenke. Generally speaking, what are your thoughts? Because I know a lot of people sort of have concerns that many English football clubs are falling into foreign ownership, and I do that with inverted commas. Is it just something that's inevitable because these are big operations in probably the most high-profile football league in the world, and generally they're public companies? It's just something that football fans are going to have to get used to.
Well, I think it's interesting that probably we have got used to it, and by that I mean that there hasn't been a massive amount of gnashing of teeth or jumping up and down singing hurrah as a result of this takeover. Because if it had happened 5 or 10 years ago, I think there would have been much more emotional reaction from Arsenal fans. But in the end, everybody has seen what's been going on. And you know that you're fighting against the tide if you think you're going to live in the same kind of environment that that football clubs had for hundreds of years prior to the last decade or so of massive change. Look at the size of the club and how much it's changed. And I guess this thing, it's not like a surprise. It's not like you woke up one morning and Arsenal had been taken over. It's been slowly and gradually happening, which is why I don't think most people at the moment are too worked up one way or the other about it. And the fact that Kroenke has been on the board for the last 4 years obviously means that everybody's been able to get used to it, and he's probably been able to get used to it as well. I guess at this stage that my biggest concern really is that he might be a fantastic owner and stand by his word not to borrow against the club and take too much money at the club. And but once the club is owned by, or majority owned by an individual, the minute that they want to sell out, you don't know what's around the corner and what's coming next. So even though everybody's probably quite hopeful that Kroenke will continue to run the club well and true to the kind of ideas that the board have been going on about since they started to be a bit more ambitious, which coincided really with the beginning of the Wenger era. You just don't know what's around the corner, be it in 2, 5, 10, or 20 years' time, if the time comes for him to sell to the next person.
Well, yeah, that's a fair point.
I guess one of the fundamental differences about what lies ahead, you know, it's pertinent at the moment in a way with the situation with Danny, is Arsenal were so lucky to have a situation where the board was really full of an excellent mix of people that brought special things to the table. Mm. And I don't think it's a coincidence that when, at the beginning of the Wenger era, when there was such great success, there was a really good balance of what people at board level brought. Obviously, you had David Dean, who brought so much success in terms of helping get the right players in, when you think about the Bergkamps and Olmes and Vieiras and et cetera. And these deals just seem to happen so smoothly, compared to how difficult it seems to be now. And then off the field, the fact that you had Danny, who came from an entrepreneurial background, again helping out Ken Fryer, who'd been at the club forever in terms of the stadium. You had Richard Carr, who's overseeing youth development, who has a legal background, and he could bring that to the table. You had Peter Hillwood, who came from a financial background. And all these key players involved in the big decision-making at that time, which was when you had great success on the pitch and great success off it in terms of the move. It was a blend of people who all had strong opinions, who were all prepared to air them, and in the end, they always used to make decisions by reaching a unanimous verdict in the end. Now we've got a different situation where there's one guy who's going to be largely responsible for the bulk of decision-making. How much he leans on the other board members is highly debatable, but he doesn't really need to. So we're clearly due for a change, because obviously it's not going to be a whole bunch of people with different ideas bringing their thoughts to the table and thrashing it out until they come to what they think is the best decision for Arsenal Football Club.
Sure. I mean, what strikes me maybe is that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about David Dean and, you know, him returning to the club. And for me, given what happened, it really doesn't seem likely at all. But what there is, perhaps, when you talk about all the...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Those different blend of skills and things that people bring to the table. We've got legal, we've got marketing, we've got financial. What we don't necessarily have is somebody specializing in the football side of things, in maybe the way that David Dean did. We know that Ivan Gazidis is a great negotiator when it comes to contract negotiations. And I listen to you and I listen to Philippe Auclair on the Gunnar podcast and Tim Payton talking about how involved Arsene was in stuff that maybe he shouldn't be involved in. So maybe the gap there is this football person, that a director of football, somebody like that, to come in, take a little bit of pressure off Arsene, because was it Tim who made the point that Arsene says he's never worked as hard? But maybe that's because he's doing stuff that he shouldn't be doing.
Well, he definitely does more than everybody else. You know, and people do make the comparison with Ferguson, who delegates massively, as well as changing his coaching staff on quite a regular basis. But more often than not, even just looking at the everyday life at the training ground, when he goes in the morning, he sits and watches while someone else takes training sessions. That's not Arsene's way. So he's taking every training session that he possibly can, as well as obviously trying to have his hand involved with the economic side, with the transfers, with the negotiations. He sort of almost does three jobs. Mm. And, you know, you wonder if in the current sort of state of football, that's just too much for one man, however talented he might be, especially Ron Stubborn man. So, you know, it would be really fascinating if Kroenke and his team, and bear in mind quite a lot of his guys have sort of been in there already, and so they know how the club works, but if he was to decide that's an area that needs to be changed. Most people who take over a new company analyse its structure and the people in it and see if they need to streamline or if they need to extend in certain areas. It would probably be very useful if that was to happen now, because maybe it's overdue to look at the system and see if it's working and see what changes can be made to help everybody concerned.
He doesn't strike me as a guy that's going to make a great deal of waves in the very short term. And obviously has faith in Arsene Wenger. The board, the past board, had faith in Arsene Wenger, and I assume that any future board will retain that faith in as much as they can, based on what happens between now and the end of the season. Do you feel that perhaps the new owner has put, or will put, a little bit more pressure on Arsene Wenger to deliver in terms of silverware? Because ultimately, regardless of the comments that he makes about what defines success, for any football fan, success is a trophy. Will it put more pressure on him to do that, or will it allow him, not necessarily to move into a comfort zone, knowing that he's got the backing of a man who isn't maybe willing to make changes straight away?
Well, I think the key there is what you said, you know, for any fan, the trophies is how you measure success. Well, is Stan Kroenke a fan? He'd like to think so, but in the end, he's an investor first and foremost. So his priorities are not the same as you or I or the listeners. His priority is a well-run club that is going to be a fantastic investment for him. Trophies, you'd like to imagine, is part of that, because obviously if you've got success on the field, that has a great knock-on effect financially as well.
Let's move to football. And at the weekend, Arsenal won their first game since February, their first league game against Blackpool. And I don't know, it summed up Arsenal. Blackpool started well, Arsenal got on top, scored two goals, could have scored a few more, let one in, went to absolute pieces against a Blackpool side that, you know, really, really worked very hard, and fair play to them, and then got the third goal that maybe they haven't got in previous games in this campaign. It really did sum up everything about the way this Arsenal team plays and what you can expect when you see them.
Look, I think in the end, given what had gone before it, you sort of don't care. I mean, in an ideal world, Arsenal would have gone and won 6-0 and everybody would have played brilliantly and Jens Lehmann would have looked, you know, like he'd rolled back 100 years and suddenly the defence would have clicked in a way you never thought possible. But that ain't going to happen. The priority was to just get a damn win under the belt. And I think in the end, you know, when you're desperate for a win, you don't really care how it comes about. And in a way, if it's a sort of bridge to between the pretty disappointing period before and between this last part of the season, which probably won't bring what everybody wants, but you can at least hope brings a jolly good fight and some positive signs, then it also helps it's you know, that you're looking to some key players coming back. Obviously, a few key players came back in time for the Blackpool game, but if you do get the defensive reinforcements that have been mooted with Szczesny and Dura coming back, certainly going to put Arsenal in a better position for the games upcoming. And you know, they can only hope to find a bit more sort of form and flair at the same time.
Mm. I mean, coming up on Sunday, Liverpool, and then midweek, Spurs. And two games that Arsenal have got to win, and really not easy games at all. The returns of Szczesny and Giroud, I think, will be quite crucial because they do provide a bit more defensive stability. And I think on the back of defensive stability, you can attack better.
Absolutely. Look, let's not kid ourselves. Anything less than 6 points doesn't even put you in a position to have, you know, be down on your knees and pray for help from elsewhere or for anything else to happen. And they are, given, if you look at the last sort of 6 weeks' form rather than the last game's form, then you wouldn't be highly optimistic about getting 6 points from these two matches. Mm. But it's, as I said, all the people coming back, Arsenal do have quite a good record at home against Liverpool. And the Tottenham game, you know, obviously, I guess Arsenal will be hoping that, apart from the obvious when you play Tottenham and you expect everybody to give absolutely everything anyway, perhaps Tottenham might have that slight post-Champions League hangover feeling that Arsenal know about for most of the last 15 years. So, you know, it's not always the easiest thing to get out of the Champions League, and perhaps Arsenal might be able to turn around to some of the Tottenham players and go, yeah, we know how you feel, guys. Been there before a few times.
More than once. Yeah, all right. Well, let's hope that's the case. Can we finally touch on Cesc Fabregas, who are 23 years of age? Yeah, let's end this. We're heading upwards. Cesc has played 300 games. The appearance against Blackpool was his 300th for Arsenal Football Club at 23 years of age, which by any standards is a remarkable achievement. But to do it with the level of consistency that he's shown from coming into the team as a 16-year-old is just incredible.
He's an exceptional player. He's a pretty exceptional guy. And contrary to some people's opinion, I'd actually argue he's not a bad captain either. I think that Arsenal have been amazingly lucky to have Cesc. And in some ways, Cesc's been pretty lucky to have Arsenal. Because as everybody knows, I think if he'd have still been at Barcelona, he certainly wouldn't have 300 games. He might have had a few and he'd probably have some more medals. But he wouldn't have had the depth of experience and the capacity to make himself probably into one of the top players in the game. So it's been on the whole, I'd say, a pretty wonderful marriage, although probably Cesc is entitled to term and say it could have been a bit glitzier with a few more rewards. But I just think that It was absolutely massive to keep hold of Cesc last summer for the club. Everybody knows it's going to be a battle every summer, and we don't know how many more summers Arsenal will manage to hang on to him. Obviously, again, that's one of the key interesting things with Kroenke coming in, whether there's going to be a different ability to have the annual fight to keep the best players and a different approach. And that, I think, will be linked with how many top players come in as well, as a sort of sign of intent to the likes of Cesc. So we wait to see how that develops, but in the meantime, I think everybody really should say a massive congratulations to Cesc and thank him for really having been a fantastic servant to the club. It's been lovely to see him develop as well. It's unusual to get a really, really, truly great player and see them from when they're literally, you know, should be at school to turning into a, you know, in his case, a World Cup winner and a top man.
So yeah. All right. Stuff. Okay, Amy, we better leave it there. Thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure.
Cheers indeed to Amy. We'll try and have her back on the show before the end of the season and hopefully with something to celebrate. Before we look ahead to the game on Sunday and the game in midweek, and two very big games they are, here's this guy.
It's the Mick Bednar Show with me, Mick Bednar. I'm deadly.
Hello there, I'm Mick Bednar, and I'm the greatest striker that ever lived. I'm better than Davor Suke, Rudy Vuller, Kareka, and Daly and Atkinson. It gave me great pleasure this week to see Jens Lehmann back in goal for Arsenal. It reminded me of the time when I was pressed into emergency service. Almunia was late for training because the ghost in his house had kept him up all night. Fabianski was rehearsing for his role in Death of a Salesman. Chesney, he'd broken both his arms. And Manone, well, he was off wiping Chesney's ass. There's that mystery solved for you. So during training, Arsene Wenger said, "Oh, McBenno, you are the greatest striker that ever lived, but could you go and goal?" "Sure thing, Arsene Wenger," I said. And I stood up to all the strikers, and they hit them left, and I dived left, and I saved it. And they hit them right, and I dived right, and I saved it. I stayed in the middle, I jumped high and low, not a single goal went in. And they were like, "Oh, McBenno, McBenno, not only are you the greatest striker that ever lived, you're the greatest goalkeeper." And that's a fact. There was only one player whose shots I couldn't save. Every single one of them hit the post. That player, Cabo Diawara.
It's the Mick Benner Show with me, Mick Benner. I'm deadly.
So two massive games coming up this week, starting on Sunday against the Mug Smashers, who will be, well, not on top of the world, but surely confidence boosted by a 3-0 win over Manchester City at the start of the week. Now, Manchester City were crap. Let's face it, on the night they were absolutely shite. And they have Tevez out injured, but still they were shite. And Liverpool were quite good, but Man City were shite. And we need to be not as shite as Man City, because if we're as shite as Man City, Liverpool will win. But if we're not as shite as Manchester City, I think we've got enough to turn those Mug Smashers over. The team news for the weekend is that there are possible returns for Chesney, Giroud, Song, and... Danielson. Sorry, it wasn't really registering with me as a great thing. Sorry to Nielsen fans, but there it is. Anyway, those four could return. The two most important, I suppose, are Chesney and Giroud. Song, of course, important, but Chesney can go in goal because Almunia's going to be out still. Otherwise, it's going to be Jens. And Johan Giroud, well, he'll slip back into the centre of the defence. And stats show that when we have Giroud in defence, I don't think we've lost a game since 1862 or something like that. Anyway, so they're two big important players to get back. And it's going to be a tough task. Then, of course, we have to go to White Hart Lane. And as Amy said, they could well be suffering from a Champions League hangover. We know how that goes. On the other hand, they've been knocked out of the Champions League, which will hurt. They don't have a game this weekend, which gives them a rest. And then they'll be all like, well, what better way to take out our Champions League frustrations than on Arsenal? They would like to think that. So these two games, in terms of where we are as a team and what hope we have of winning the title, slim and all as it is, it's still there just at this moment in time. These two games are just huge. 6 points from six has got to be the way. I know United, they're playing Everton, I think, at the weekend. I don't expect Everton to do a whole lot, seeing as pretty much all their players are out injured. And United are on that kind of, well, we'll just roll on and win games kind of a run. So really big, big games. But the win against Blackpool, hopefully, has restored a little bit of the confidence. And generally speaking, this team has managed to get itself up for big games this season, particularly at home. A bit of the old Chelsea spirit would do wonders. On Sunday, we've got to be quick and sharp and aggressive and press and do all those things. And then on Wednesday, we've just really got to kick the fuck out of Spurs. Because last season, it was towards the end of last season as well, maybe a little bit later, but that guy who's never played another game for them since scored that goal. You know, the one where Almunia went, "That's a good shot. There's a good shot. Oh, look, it's in." Then he put his hands up. So we need a bit of revenge for that. And we certainly need some revenge for what happened at the Grove earlier in the season. 2-0 up at halftime. Everything's hunky-dory and rosy. And then at the end, it's 3-2 to them. And that's not good. So we should demand revenge. Swift and bloody and painful revenge at that too. And that should drive the team. They've got their motivation already. They know they have to win these games. but use the fact that Spurs did that to us at home. At home. And made us all very unhappy. Use that as extra motivation. And if you need extra motivation to beat Liverpool, remember, they smashed my mug. The fucking cunts. Anyway, let's keep fingers crossed that everything goes well. That's about that for this week's Arsecast. It's up nice and early, so if you're an early bird, I hope it's taking you to work well. Talk to you on next week's show. Until then, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
In a move that has shocked the world of association football, Arsenal today announced that it had been sold to an American for a fee of £7,000. New chairman Randy Hillwood said,
"Get the fuck out of here, you fucking fuck."
The club's new emblem, an eagle which shits bombs, will be unveiled at the new stadium on Saturday with special guest Metro Man Randy Savage.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.